I said, ah, screw this, and I picked up Selesnya.
I was just afar away from magic and cardboard.
Much like the Demir operative I am at heart.
I'm a fool. Yes, that's my other one.
I am loving flavor text more than I ever have.
That is rap air horn good.
You're just already losing that game. That's just all there is to it.
This may be one of the better design sets so far.
Muldrotha has called, and the Underrealm Lich has answered. Oh, you brave soul. Welcome to the Rotation Edition of Tryhards. I'm Sean Seacrease. He's Brian Tibbetts. And he's Matt Hurley. Coming up this week, what we're sorry to see go. What we're not sorry to see go. Cards we're hyped for return to Ravnica. Breaking it all down this evening here on Tryhards. We started every week with what are you drinking? For me, it was an easy choice. There is something that is not happening tonight that usually happens. But for a third year in a row, it's not. My beloved St. Louis Cardinals are not in the playoffs again, so this must be a fantasy land. I've got the Urban Chestnut fantasy land here this evening to try and assuage my baseball angst going into the postseason. Ryan, I know you're a Cardinal fan as well. It's a terrible time of year. Also compounded by the fact that we have a Cub fan on the cast. We'll get to him maybe 20 or 30 minutes from now. Brian, what are you drinking tonight?
I didn't even want to look, smell, taste anything from the great city of St. Louis, even from something as amazing as Urban Chestnut. So the pain's still too raw for me. I went to the brown alcohol tonight. I'm still sipping on the last little bit of the Edredur single malt that the wife brought back for me from Scotland this past June. And oh my God, the way that you're supposed to have this, and I didn't know this ever, you never put ice cubes in a single malt because the oils cling to it. The ice kind of congeals the oils, but you have a little bit of water and all that aroma comes out and it's working really well.
Well, Brian, wait a minute. You've drank enough brown liquors. You got to tell me you don't have whiskey stones.
I have no problem drinking this delicious single malt at like room temperature with just a little bit of room temperature distilled water. It's fantastic. So no, I do have whiskey stones. I just wanted something like room temperature. The other thing is this, and I'll just admit this. It's the daughter's sixth birthday today. We had a ton of Mexican food, came home and had a ton of delicious mother-in-law's cake and ice cream, and I was just like, oh God, I need something to settle my stomach. So this is doing like double duty tonight, let's say.
Well, if there's one reason a stomach would be upset, it's because your favorite baseball team didn't make the postseason, or maybe your favorite baseball team was a front-running show pony all year, and when it came to game 163, well, they just didn't get it done. And now that dominant team is in danger of not making it past the wild card game. That was, let's say, the case with your team. What would you be drinking tonight?
Well, I'm only one game back, so just throwing that out there right now.
I have no idea what that means.
Matt, the season's
over. I know.
Over.
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
I was only
one
game back.
Game 163 today. So Cubs in the wild card game. By the time this comes out, the Cubs might be out of the playoffs. So with that on your mind, what are you drinking?
They are. Let me. I'm not even going to lie about that.
No loyalty.
This is a whole nother conversation. Tonight, we've got some delicious rum. We found a really nice, it's a mix of a coconut rum, it's like a sugarcane coconut rum. Very interesting and very, very good. Super classy with it tonight.
All right. Hopefully your straw is bringing all that flavor right to you with your coconut rum this evening.
Why would I use a straw?
I just imagine you with a straw with that kind of drink. This weekend was pre-release weekend. No major tournaments this weekend as everybody was enjoying their very first taste of Guilds of Ravnica. Matt, did you have any time to get involved in a pre-release? And what are your initial thoughts on that sealed format?
Saturday, I was going to go Friday night. We ended up actually going to Oktoberfest. And that's where this Cub nonsense goes. Breaking our diet and drinking some beer for the first time in what seems like months. Because of that, I did not make it to midnight pre-release because we didn't get home until 1:30. So I ended up going to the Saturday one, had Demir in my hand. Seemed like Demir was really the most powerful. That's what everyone was saying. And I said, screw this. And I picked up Selesnya. My deck was not really good. I was splashing red for, I had like the thing that you can take two different attack steps with. I was splashing red. I ended up going like taking my second loss. I got an early draw, which really screwed up my tiebreakers, and ended up taking my second loss and getting home after, I want to say it was round six, round seven, something along those lines. I wasn't super happy with that, but the format plays really well. It plays fairly quick. And my friend Brian, who I always two-head giant with, we ended up two-head giant yesterday, which was Sunday, and he went Dimir, and I went Boros, and he went Boros on Saturday. He was playing one rare in his deck. He was playing his Aurelia, and the rest was just an amazing curve, and he took the entire tournament down. I think it was 115 people in that pre-release, and then yesterday for two-head giant, we didn't do very well. Our decks were okay. I got stuck on three lands in Boros, 16-land Boros. I got stuck on one land and three land, four matches in a row, and it just wasn't working for us. So we didn't do well yesterday, but we did have 128 people come out for the two-headed giant release. So we had two huge pre-releases. The sealed format, very interesting. It's not as slow and grindy as some of these other sealed formats are. I'm finding that there's not a lot of like super bombs. There's a few, but there's not a bunch of crazy, yeah, I win the game bombs. The Planeswalkers, Vraska can get out of hand very quickly, but in general, they're not the, you know, they're not the must kill. You can deal with them a turn or two later without a huge problem. So I'm super happy with the format. I've drafted already a couple times, and I think this is going to be way better, and it's not going to, I'm not going to get bored of it for quite a while.
Well, hopefully it'll be a format that has some legs going forward, considering it's just picking up now. With my schedule this weekend, I was able to jump on the open beta of Arena for my quote-unquote pre-release weekend. Did a Guilds of Ravnica sealed, played a Golgari deck that I actually splashed some white for to make it rock because nothing beats rock. I was able to, in that one-game format where you play to, I think it's seven wins or three losses, get to five wins before I took my third loss. I had fun with the format. I didn't find it wildly overpowered. There were only a couple of games I found frustrating with permanents on the other side. Legion War Boss being both of those things on the other side. That card is very, very good in limited. But the one thing I ran into all weekend, whether it was playing in that or playing in what I thought was the very cool Welcome Weekend free singleton events that WotC put up on Arena to give you a chance to pick up some free rares and mythics over the weekend. And I was able to pick up a handful, and three of them were even playable. The issue that I had with it, I got the same error message more times this weekend than I did during the entire closed beta. And that was this: you have been disconnected from the server. That might have popped up two times during the closed beta. I saw that message 10 times over the weekend. While it didn't pop up during gameplay, it did pop up at seemingly every other moment that I was trying to use the client. So I don't know if it was just an overwhelming number of people who were loading on for pre-release weekend, but hopefully that's something that they can get cleaned up, because it's just a frustrating speed bump when you're trying to use what so far has been a pretty good client to use. And it seems like they've even paid some attention to the economy. Not that there's dusting or any other thing so far, but, and we're only about 4 days into it, but each day you've been able to, by virtue of playing one game, not winning, playing one game, get an entire deck. And they're including three or four rares in every one of those free decks that you get for just playing a game. Maybe they found a way, at least at the beginning of the open beta, to get some more desirable, higher rarity cards into players' hands. So kudos to Wizards for trying to do that so far.
They need to add that dusting system, though. I do not want to sink money into that until they figure out a way of what I'm going to do with my mythics and rares after they rotate out.
Because there's nothing quite so bad as the feeling that, hey, I went 4-0 in the Singleton Welcome Event weekend. I got two mythics for that effort.
Yeah.
Those two mythics that I achieved, one, Admiral Beckett Brass. And I thought, oh, God, there's only, like, that's the second worst mythic ever. The only thing I'd pick that over was the other mythic that I got, Apex of Power.
Oh, Jesus.
Now,
you didn't want to brew a deck with those two? Come on.
Not really. I said I did get some playable cards. I did get a Karn through that. So that was actually very cool to get as well. So those weren't my only mythics I was able to pick up over the weekend. Brian, what'd you do for pre-release?
I was in contact with the guys who were playing pre-release, and from afar, from my busy, busy weekend, whether I was at school at school events or I was on the soccer field, I was just afar away from Magic and Cardboard. You know how much I love Sealed, and it just kills me not to be at pre-release weekend where I can just kind of, you know, open those six packs and kind of let my fingers just do their magic, so to speak. So anyway,
do their magic.
It's a little frustrating not being able to do that. Just the timing. It just seems like October always jumps up and bites me in the butt.
Well, hopefully you didn't pay too much to be bitten there, because that's not a great return on investment, at least on on that part of the anatomy. Well, one thing we thought we were going to be diving into today was Wizards' banned and restricted announcement. There were no big tournaments over the weekend, so no tournament news to break down. There certainly will be next week. And we'll talk about that in just a moment. Guys, the B&R was empty. From the world of European football, it was a clean sheet. No banned or restricted announcements in any format. That brings us right up to the cards that we are hyped about. We have put off talking about Guilds of Ravnica, preview spoilers, whatever you want to call them. It is always fun to get new presents under your magic tree. Whether it's magical Christmas land or more of a tournament bent, when you get new tools, maybe even new weapons, that's such a fun time of year. But before you can get to the new stuff, you have to acknowledge the role of that which has left. And so with that in mind, I asked all of us, myself, Brian, and Matt, to come up with cards that we're going to be sad to see go on rotation this Friday, and some cards that we are just get the f*** out. You have overstayed your welcome. All right, let's start with the cards we are glad to see go. What are you glad to see marching out the door as we head up on standard rotation?
I think going with the artwork of the card, kind of pointing off to the left of the card frame, Hazoret, just get out. It's just nice to see that card not being part of standard anymore. It was just such an absolute powerhouse. How many times did I turn on Magic the Gathering hoping to watch something brewed in standard, in modern, and hey, there's Hazoret again and again and again. I think I just got a little bit of tired welcome. Good card design. I liked all the gods in Amonkhet, but Hazoret needed to go.
Scarab God. That.
Amen, brother. I got my choir robe on.
I just think it led to a very narrow gameplay. Did not like it one bit at all.
Yeah, following that up, I had Scarab God as well. One of the ones I'm glad to see go, Aether Flux Reservoir. You want to talk about narrow gameplay, and you knew that certain decks had absolutely no interaction against a deck packing Aether Flux Reservoir and its dynamic game plan. Now, I'm not saying they were easy to pilot. I'm not saying that they came together flawlessly every time. But there were games when that card just completely obviated every other strategy. I am so glad to see Aether Flux Reservoir hit the bricks.
I'm pretty happy to see Cast Out go. Even having played it a little bit, that card just has so much text on there. It just made it kind of too easy of removal for white. It flashes in. It targets a permanent. You can cycle it. I thought the casting cost, you know, yeah, a little high for, but man, that card, it was just too clean of an answer to so many things. And I felt like that was when the people going up against those blue-white control decks are just like, you know what, we got to figure out something else to do here because that's just too oppressive of a card. So happy to see Cast Out go by the wayside.
That was one of the answers to Hazoret. So that's interesting. You had both of those on the same list. Speaking of Hazoret's friend, one of the cards I was glad to see go, and it can go bearing all the gifts it had with it, Bomat Courier, get out. Like,
yeah,
since when
I would agree with that
mono
one a lot.
Red get card advantage off of a one drop? Like, that's ridiculous. Color pie calling. I'm broken. Yes. And I understand any color could have played it because it was a generic one mana one drop. I understand that. But the way that the curve was built on the particular colors and strategies on this last iteration of standard, there was no color that was getting more out of Bomat Courier than red. And that was just such a frustrating play pattern at times.
At the times that it would hit the table as well, get in for the point of damage and offer you card advantage, and then you play Island Go. You're just already losing that game. That's just all there is to it.
Matt, did you have another card that you were waving off toward the door?
Heart of Kieran. Get out of here, Heart of Kieran. I think it was a combination of that with the Planeswalker, the Gideon that could become a creature, but the Heart of Cairn was just the worst. If it didn't have vigilance, we'd be talking a totally different game. But
if it didn't have vigilance, it wouldn't have been mythic.
Let's not have that argument.
All right. I guess the last card on my list was the companion card to Aetherflux Reservoir. And I know I'm going to be seeing it in Eternal formats. Paradoxical Outcome. Just, oh my God. Are you serious right now? I mean, you've got me quoting Dick Vitale in some ways there, and that hasn't been good or relevant in a couple of decades, but Paradoxical Outcome, yes, it's better in older formats where you have more zero drops, I understand that, but you also have the tools to fight over it at that point. It just felt like when it was played in Standard that you didn't have the tools to fight over that card. Sometimes it was a dud, 90% of the time it was a blowout, at least when it was played against me, so I was glad to see Paradoxical Outcome go.
The only other one is that stupid two drop that makes things unblockable, or that that you can't block with, that has you can bring back from the graveyard with Eternalize.
Earthshaker Kenra.
Yeah, Earthshaker Kenra. Without that particular case of, hey, this is how this, you know, like this is how I make my stuff unblockable, I think that one was the huge problem card for the format.
I think that card just was a victim of how good the red deck was. And overpowered, because that the addition of that card in that mono red deck, or the red black iteration as it later became, just made it so oppressive, because it could just start swinging for ridiculous amounts of damage. And if you started chaining Kenras together turn after turn, which I saw happen a little bit, it became a little bit unbearable to watch, and you kind of had to remove yourself from the scene.
Yep.
Those are the cards that we are glad to see go. But with every rotation, there are cards that you're going to miss. What are the cards you're going to miss? This was easy for me. My number one, because it wasn't overpowered at any point, but it offered you versatility for a single colored pip, two generic and one black. I'm going to miss Doomfall the most.
Great flavor. Very versatile, kind of fits into the Sean deck building archetypes I've come to know and hate a lot, because it just can wreck you in a couple of different ways. So, no, Doomfall is definitely a card that I think people are going to miss more than they think.
Brian, did you have one that you are going to miss as it rotates?
Oh, absolutely. This is, I'm crying a tear right now into my scotch, is Torrential Gearhulk. We had such a good run. Such a good run. There is no better feeling than flashing in Gearhulk and being able to glimmer, or being able to disallow, being able to do something totally broken for a while in Standard. I felt like I was playing Legacy, and to still have that 5-6 body on the battlefield was just phenomenal. So I really like doing some broken things for a while in Standard with Torrential Gearhulk, the best of the Gearhulks, in my opinion.
You know, the thing that is also on my list that was the most efficient answer to that, that I'm sad to see go, my Abrades. Because you wanted to do that, and then for two mana, I got your answer right here, control guy, Abrade.
There's actually two cards, and they're about the same card, so I'm just going to list them together. But they were just overpowered by the power of the Kaladesh block, and then the gods. You just couldn't make any fun decks with them. And that's Paradox Engine and Panharmonicon. I really wish that there would have been some more brew space, but I think those other blocks were so powerful, you didn't have any brew space to work with.
That's interesting, because there were so many things banned during this time that you're talking about cards that still couldn't find a foothold. We'll see if Wizards has kind of adjusted the way that they put the power into the sets because of that. There's one more on my list, Brian. Card I'm sad to see go. For all the reasons you already listed, Cast Out. I love it so much. It was so versatile, because you could, in a match where you thought you were behind, you could cycle it. It was an answer to Indestructibles. It was an instant speed answer to Planeswalkers. It was something that you absolutely needed against Teferi if you were playing white and not playing your own Teferis. So I just thought the versatility, I didn't think the card itself was overpowered, but to me, and you're going to see a theme in my cards of Doomfall, Abrade, Cast Out, versatility in cards. And I think that's what I'm going to miss the most.
No, I totally see it. And I kind of had a love-hate relationship, because it's a card you never want to see on the other side of the table. And at the same time, you're like, oh, thank God I drew that Cast Out right when I needed it. I'm sad to see this go. And I'm going to use this as kind of like the linchpin in the archetype, because I thought it was such a perfectly designed card almost. And it just kind of bred this archetype, is Winding Constrictor. I felt like those constrictor decks that could take advantage of extra counters, and then, you know, the rise of the walking ballistas. That was just such a fun archetype to watch kind of unfold and develop over the course of its success in Standard. I thought that Winding Constrictor was just such a great card, and it was always fun to see where people were taking that. So I'm going to be really sad to see that go as a way to build around.
For every piece of cardboard that rides off into the sunset at Rotation, there is a legion of new cardboard that thinks it's good enough to take those spots. Guys, it's time to talk Guilds of Ravnica. We've held out longer than we ever have in any other preview season here on the show, but now let's get hyped. All right, we've got all kinds of hype going on right now for Guilds of Ravnica preview. It is going to be just the hype show for the next little bit here on TryHards. I downloaded that app just for that this weekend.
I got to call Lori.
All right, you can put me in timeout if you want to. The Sin Bin, as hockey season is getting started here later this week. What cards are you guys absolutely hyped for, Matt, from Guilds of Ravnica? You're looking at the set list, you're seeing the previews, and what?
I hope to cast a lot of Notion Rain. And I know that's weird because I'm naming a common, but holy hell, is that card good?
It's the Dimir Read the Bones.
As you guys know, and maybe the listeners don't know, I love me some Read the Bones. And I gotta say, I am super excited to build a deck that uses Notion Rain in some way.
So I'm gonna follow up with the only uncommon that I am hyped for. No, I'm not gonna break out the air horn for that one. And that is because of one line of text on it. It says sacrifice creature or planeswalker, plague crafter. 2 and a black for a 3/2 or a 2/2. I can't remember. But when it comes into play, each player sacrifices a creature or a planeswalker. So that means that if you keep your opponent's board clear and they drop a Karn, they drop Teferi, they drop whatever, you can drop this little 3-mana dude, maybe sack it. Maybe you sack something else that gives you a return on it, but they have to sacrifice that planeswalker. It looks innocuous, but I think Plague Crafter is going to pop up more often than you think. Brian, is there a card you're hyped for?
Cards I'm hyped for, and I'm going to, I kind of purposefully tried to do this where I wasn't going to go just after the Chase Rares or the Mythics. I was looking at some cards that had playability and I kind of went one for each color that I was kind of hyped about. So I'm going to kind of go with maybe the one we've already maybe talked about it a little bit. Sorry, it's blue again, guys, but the Mission Briefing. Mission Briefing might be as good as advertised. It might be better as advertised. This is basically the Surveil 2, choose an instant or sorcery in your graveyard, cast that card this turn. It's not Snapcaster by any stretch of the imaginations, but I feel like Mission Briefing is going to see a lot of play and just might be one of the breakout cards from the set. So if I open this, I'm just going to probably build around it just so I can say I cast it once and maybe, you know, take my one prize pack and go home.
Hurley, we were both making the same old man sounds. I think this might be a trap card in the set.
This is a super trap card. Brian, let me ask you a question, and I'm totally stealing somebody else's thunder here. How many times have you played Recollect as number 5 through 7 of what's the card that has a 2/1 body on it that gets a card from your graveyard?
Oh, I play it in Nykfit. That is Eternal Witness.
Yes.
Yeah, Eternal
How
Witness.
How many times do you play Recollect over Eternal Witness?
I don't play Recollect over Eternal Witness. Okay. This is true.
So that's the exact same thing. You're paying.
Oh, you're absolutely right. I'm thinking more of along the lines. You guys made fun of me last week for my Steamkin pick on 3 minutes to brew. So I'm thinking, screw the creatures, man. We're going all spells and stuff. We're just going to try to get there. So I feel like this is a fun card. It really looks exciting to me.
We'll see if this picks up steam going forward and has some more backers the next time we talk about it. Other things that I'm excited for. Guys, I think that there is a one drop now that would have been totally unplayable in the Fatal Push era that may redefine Standard, and that's Pelt Collector in green. Mm-hmm. One green, one. It's got the old mechanic from previous Ravnica, essentially, that whenever you play a creature with more power than it has, you put a 1/1 counter on it. If it has 3 counters or more on it, it gets trample. I think completely unplayable in a format with Fatal Push, but without it, now you have to wait to have your undergrowth count built up for the new black 1-mana removal spell. I think Pelt Collector is going to be interesting, and I think it's the weapon that the mono green curb out aggro deck was missing, because now they can do Llanowar Elf into the 3-drop 5/4 Knight, or they can go with Pelt Collector and start dropping other things. So it actually gives them two avenues of attack for one mana in their opening hand. I think this was an important card for that deck.
So I've got one that's initially I was very, very low on. I saw it played once at the pre-release. It went up a little bit, and now I've seen some deck lists with it in there, and I'm like, ooh, I want to brew with this bad boy. And that's Niv-Mizzet Perrin. I think that card might be good, like secretly really good. I am really looking forward to playing some or playing that card, especially alongside Sarkhan as well.
Wow.
I know.
There's no doubt that card is powerful, and there's no doubt that if that card hits the battlefield, you are immensely ahead based on just the damage it can do with the card draw alone, especially in the colors you're playing with blue and red. I just feel like the triple red, the triple blue, losing some of the mana fixing we have from standard now, it's going to be a little tougher. Just build around the four steam vents.
I don't know. I mean, I just, every time I saw this card played, I was highly impressed. And I think the key there is Sarkhan. I really do. I think you need Sarkhan to make that colored mana so that you can play like Grixis Dragons.
And that also opens up the ability to put Nicol Bolas in there as well. So
you got a point there. That's a big point. That might be a playable card in that Dragons deck.
Those two working together, kind of scary to me. Brian, what's another card you're hyped for?
Very hyped about Blood Operative. I think now that we've got all the Kaladesh and Amonkhet stuff by the wayside, as we know, guys, Ixalan block is very tribal oriented. And, you know, we may see the rise of Merfolk. We may see the rise of vampires. And Blood Operative is a vampire assassin for 2BB. It's a 3/1 lifelinker. When it enters the battlefield, you may exile target card from a graveyard. When you surveil, Blood Operative is, if it's in your graveyard, you may pay 3 life. And if you do, return it to your hand. That recursion idea, and, you know, casting it, getting a 3/1 that can block, and this basically cost you no life because it's got lifelink. I feel like that's going to be an interesting card to build around, especially on those kind of grindy games where you need a little bit of time to set up. But maybe as a vampire archetype, Blood Operative looks pretty cool.
You know, you mentioned vampires being back in standard. I'd like to welcome Vampiric Tutor back to standard.
Jeez.
That's right. Mausoleum Secrets. Have you seen this? Is one and a black. Go get a black card and put it in your hand.
Demonic Tutor, by the way. So
Because Tutor can get you whatever you want. And so there is a restriction on Vampiric Tutor. Put it on top of your deck. There's a restriction on Mausoleum Secrets. So not quite as good as Demonic Tutor, but still a tutor back in standard, one that's splashable for a variety of color combinations.
Oh, I agree with you 100% on that.
I think that is rap air horn good. Talk a little bit about that. I'm going to take two in a row just because we said some of us avoided some obvious mythics. I'm not so educated to do that. I'm going to be crass enough to talk about Doom Whisperer. It's a 6/6 flying trampler for 3 and 2 black, and it surveils for just the free payment of 2 life at this point. The only thing that I'm not sure of about this is whether it's worth the $18 to $20 I'm seeing it at pre-order for, Matt. Are you a believer on the financial side in Doom Whisperer, or should people be like waiting for this?
If you want to play the deck, I think it's every bit of $18 or $20. It's that good.
All right. We'll see if that holds on to that number going forward. Matt, you got another one you're hyped about?
Actually, I'm going to do a twofer here as well. Not the same card, but they go into a very similar deck. And that's Lazav, the Multifarious, Etrada, the Silencer. I saw both these cards played, and Lazav is good enough. I've been kind of looking at a card to put into my bug deck in Modern. I think Lazav may be the card I want, because being able to transform that into a Goyf, maybe like a 5/6 Goyf after it's unblocked or something, may be good enough. But I think these two are two peas in the pod, and I'm super excited to see what happens with those.
I'm really excited, not very much for Izzet in this set, but, you know, I love me some Izzet. The Planeswalker is a little disappointing. The Niv-Mizzet might be really good in that Dragons deck, but I am really excited about Ionize. Anytime you can have a counter spell that that deals damage. That seems really, really good. And Ionize for only a red, a blue, and one counter target spell. That's it. Target spell and two damage to that spell's controller. That seems really, really good. I think this is as a hard counter, I'll gladly go the multi-blue and red just to get that hard counter and do that damage, because this set has a lot of damage that you can do. Beacon Bolt, other red burn spells. I think that's going to definitely be an archetype we're going to see going forward.
Brian, that card is... And we're going to break down the casting cost on this card
right
now. Tell
us how you really like.
Okay.
All right, what you really feel about
Watsy
it.
Watsy has said that Counterspell is too good for Modern. Straight Counterspell. Blue, mm-hmm. counter target spell. Casting cost on Ionize is a generic, a red, and a blue for counter target spell. We know that Shock costs one red to do two damage. Now, you get the option to do it to creature or player as well. But what they're doing is they stapled a Shock onto a hard counter that costs generic one and blue. Okay, yep. So if Counterspell is too good for Modern, but Ionize is going to be in Standard, if you break down the casting costs and understand... Now, I understand that you have to have two different colors rather than just blue, so you can't play it in a mono blue deck. But you also don't have the restriction of the requirement for double blue. You're freed up to have a blue and a red. Ionize, I think if there's a card they look back on in this set and say, oh, we might have messed something up, it's not going to be Doom Whisperer. It's going to be Ionize.
Yeah, I already have my thank you note already penned to watch.
You better.
Just because I think this card is going to be hella good.
There's another card that has my eye. Knight of Autumn. One, yeah. A green, and a white. And you get a knight that has three different modes. This is the EBT Brontodon. All right. Rather than having the 3/4 that you have to pay another one to blow something up, you get those options with Knight of Autumn when it enters the battlefield, or you can just straight gain 4 life. Where was this card in the last Standard format so that you had a main deckable answer to the mono red Hazoret Chain Whirler aggro deck? Knight of Autumn, I think this one's going to ride under the radar in some places, but this is the kind of utility player that you have to tie some decks together. So Knight of Autumn, that's really the last one on my list that I'm looking at going, we can do some things with you.
So I have 3 more on my list, but 2 of them, again, are just tied very closely together. Tristani, I can't wait to cast some Tristani, and then March of the Multitudes, which has already doubled in price over the weekend, because every time I've seen that cast, it's absolutely insane. The one that I am really interested in that I have been overly impressed with is Disinformation Campaign.
Yeah, that's been good when I've seen it online.
Oh my gosh. You get into a control deck like a Grixis Control or something like that. Hell, even a Bug Control in Standard. I think you could do it with the new Vraska if you really wanted to get you some card draw, but you play a Bug Control deck. You just have a few Surveil in there, and holy cow, that card is just amazing. I mean, it is so much card advantage. It's just amazing. There's no other word for it.
Yeah, just getting the 3 mana, your opponent discards a card, might seem below rate, but there are so many incidental times that you Surveil, and the Dimir creatures, many of them Surveil upon attack. So now starting that loop, yeah, I think this Information Campaign could be very interesting. Brian, you got more cards you're hyped for?
Got one more that I'm really interested in, and I'm curious to see if this one is going to kind of stick around in Standard, or if this is going to be one of those that finds a spot in a deck in, you know, Legacy and Vintage and Modern, and that's Goblin Cratermaker. 2/2 Goblin for a red and one, and for one generic, sacrifice Goblin Cratermaker, and then you get to choose. Deals 2 damage to target creature or destroy target colorless non-land permanent. Just the versatility, as we've been talking about all night, seems really, really great, taking out some kind of artifact, taking out somebody's Delver in Legacy or Modern. I feel like this card is going to find a home in a couple of different decks.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see if Cratermaker is picked up in main decks going forward or remains as a sideboard option. Much like the Dimir operative I am at heart, I held out on you. I have actually one more after I said I was done. No, I want to come back for one more, and it's a double. It is the split card, Connive and Concoct. I'm the reanimator player in the group, so you shouldn't be surprised about this. The ability to sort of dream leash or take an opponent's creature that's 2 mana cost or less, or surveil 3 and then reanimate, that seems like a really good card. And I think there are going to be some control strategies, be they Grixis, be they Dimir, be they Bug, that are going to get a lot out of Connive and Concoct going forward. So we'll see how those end up playing together.
Just mention one thing real quick about guilds too. I think after seeing the play, after seeing the commons, uncommons, the power level of the mythics, which is not extremely high, this may be one of the better design sets so far I've seen just in initial impression. And I say that because there's a lot of powerful cards in here, but I don't think there's cards that are format warping within standard. They all have their limitations. They all have specific decks they have to go into or deck building restrictions. So I have been super impressed, which I could easily be wrong, but I have been super impressed so far.
Yeah, it's interesting. We saw him push the power down the rarity scale in Dominaria, and then there were some concerns about how M19 turned out. We'll see how this ends up playing in the long run going forward. Well, if there's one thing we don't have to concoct, it's the gruesome menagerie of financial advice that you get every week here on Tryhards. For this week's In the Elevator, I turn you over to our own Matt Hurley.
Growing Rights of Itlamok. Under $6, you can even get some of them under $5. It's a flip card, hard to reprint. I would even say if you're interested, pick up the buy box promo at under $25. That's going to go nowhere but up, and it's never going to be less expensive than it is now. First time it pops up on camera, it's going to spike, and it's going to be about a $10 card because it's so close to Gaia's Cradle. So Growing Rights of Itlamok at under about $5.50 or so is a fantastic investment.
We've only got three animals on this cast. No chance to flip that here. We'll see how it goes going forward. That brings us up to this week's 3 minutes to brew.
Card selection over card advantage. What would you guys rather have? This is a mythic from Guild of Ravnica. Zombie Elf Shaman, Underrealm Lich. 5 casting cost, a green, a black, and 3 generic. If you would draw a card, instead look at the top 3 cards of your library, then put 1 into your hand and the rest into your graveyard. You may pay 4 life. Underrealm Lich gains indestructible until end of turn. Tap it. On a 4-3 body, Hurley, does this have good value going forward for all of these Golgari decks that want that selection?
Unfortunately, I have to say no. I've played this. I played this on both Arena and on Magic Online. That 3 toughness, yes, you can pay 4 life to give it indestructible, but that 3 toughness is just too much of a liability. If this was like a 2-5, I think this would be significantly better, but that 3 toughness kills it. Having a Sylvan Library on here, a Sylvan Library Light, is really, really cool, but I do think this should cost about 4 mana. The bonus here is if you're playing a Bug Control deck, if you could protect this, I think this is an amazing card. But you get into strange situations where you have like the card you want, and then you have a land, but you have to put the other 2 cards into your graveyard. So you're like, well, crap, I want both these. Do like the card a lot. I just don't know where it fits. And then the other bonus here is actually when this is out and in play, you can't lose the game to decking. And that's because it's a replacement effect, so you never actually draw another card.
Sean, in these kind of high-risk, high-reward cards, do you think that Underrealm Lich passes the smell test?
Well, there's one thing I never want to do. It's smell any of the Golgari, so it's not going to pass that smell test. Matt was right about one thing and wrong about one thing. The thing he's right about is 5 is the new key toughness in Standard because of Lava Coil doing 4 and exiling that creature. This creature would have been much better served as a 2-5 than a 4-3, and the ability to pay life and give it indestructible, to me that feels like a hedge against it being too good as an ongoing draw filtering sort of creature. The thing that Matt was wrong about is that you don't have to put the cards in your graveyard, you get to put the cards in your graveyard. This is a diesel-charged Sylvan Library, and I think the decks that are set up to take advantage of this on both sides will effectively be drawing 3 cards a turn. Muldrotha has called, and the Underrealm Lich has answered.
I really do think so as well. I feel like with the Surveil mechanic, where you want to put cards into your graveyard to activate all of the different effects going forward with the jump start. This looks like a card that I'm about 70-30 on right now. I really think that it's got more upside than downside. I like the 4-3 body only because I think that this is something that you do want to attack with. You want it kind of as your general, so to speak, moving forward. It can get kind of out of control with card advantage if you do not do anything on the other side of the table. So I kind of like the design on that part. It could be a total bust with, you know, the three toughness. It may come down, get you a card or two, or do absolutely nothing and you've spent five mana on Zilch. The jumpstart mechanic is going to see whether this card lives or die.
Underrealm Lich or Underwhelming Lich. I don't know what to make of it. That from Brian.
Did your terrible app come with free puns? Is that what happened?
That's absolutely not, and I don't even know what you're talking about. As we get ready for this week's What'd You Do to Get Better at Magic? There you go, Brian. It misses you already. What'd you do to get better at Magic? For me, it was just getting a chance to play a little bit of Guilds of Ravnica on Arena Online, getting exposed to some of the cards. There are some cards that are better than I thought they were, and I think this is a crucial part to evaluation. Being willing to say there are some cards that are worse than you thought they were. The card I have not been impressed with, Assassin's Trophy. Maybe it's because it's the limited environment and the extra land means so much more because the individual cards aren't as high of a power level as they will be in Constructed, but Assassin's Trophy has kind of underwhelmed me so far.
Got to play a lot of cards with Guilds of Ravnica. Got to talk a lot of Modern with people, specifically about Assassin's Trophy, and tune my deck. The cards are out on Magic Online, and my rental service will have them on Wednesday. So I will be playing some Magic this weekend, probably, to knock out as much testing with the bug mid-range deck as I can. So I think we settled upon another card that I need. And Sean, you're going to get a good kick out of this. Thrun the Last Troll. I forgot that exists.
Some Thrun.
It's in here. It's in here, buddy. I didn't even think about it. Somebody looked at me and said Thrun. I go, I'm a fool. Yes, that's my other one. Because I said I needed a four drop in here.
If you ever wanted an answer that you didn't know the question to, it's Thrun.
Absolutely. I agree 100%. We got to do a lot of talking about that. And so I made some changes. Got some good theory crafting. And I'm going to start tearing this up. Unless this bug deck just the bed, I'm almost sure this is going to be my deck moving forward.
Matt just dropped some 400-level language on us, Brian. Theory crafting. What'd you do to get better at Magic this week?
I feel like I took almost a week off of getting better at Magic, but it did feel kind of fun to just play around with digital pictures of cards and kind of get the brew space going of, wow, what would I have built had I opened this kind of stuff at pre-release and things. I think sometimes the pictures of the cards and looking at what Wizards is doing from a mechanic standpoint, from kind of a flavor profile standpoint, it's going to be fun to actually get my hands on the cards and put a deck together for sure in a limited format. That's what I'm really looking forward to. Didn't probably do anything to get better, but I do have to say, I am loving flavor text more than I ever have. And I feel like Wizards did a really, really good job with this set on flavor text. I've just been scrolling through reading flavor text a lot in the last few days, just to kind of give my brain a chance to shut off. And kudos to you guys, whoever's writing that stuff out there. Loving what I'm seeing.
Multiple choice question. Which one of the tryhards is an English teacher by profession? You don't need to turn that in right now. Answer coming up next week after SCG Columbus, the team trios, GP's Montreal and Mexico City, limited to celebrate the new set. Oh, you brave soul, may you open well. We'll see you next week here on Tryhards.